For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
This episode of the Gegenpressing podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. The tournament is here. BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contest out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up until the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices and even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. Head to the BetOnline today and get in on the action. Remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that is B-L-E-A-V, BELIEVE, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. Hello and welcome to Gegenpressing, the Bundesliga podcast. I'm Manu Feit, he's Stefan Bielenkowski, he's Matt Ford. Guys, after almost 3,500 days, Borussia Dortmund have won a game at the Allianz Arena. It's been 10 years. Since then, Germany has won a World Cup. Pep Guardiola is no longer at Bayern Munich. Jürgen Klopp has actually ended his career at Liverpool. That's how long ago this is. I've gotten married since and turned from 30 to 40. This has been a long time coming. It has finally happened. And for Dortmund, it's almost meaningless. Well, not almost, but here we are. Guys, first of all, before we dive into this historic Bundesliga moment, I guess, Matt, how's it going? You're muted, buddy.
Oh, you've muted yourself.
He's so excited to come on that he's forgotten to unmute himself.
And what you didn't hear me saying was that the day has got better as it went on, but clearly not, because it's still muted. The 15:30 kickoffs in Germany were all absolutely terrible. We'll get onto that later. Yep. And I sat there this afternoon wondering what on earth I'm doing with my life. However, the so-called Classica was fascinating for lots of reasons. The days ended quite well. All right.
Yeah, it did. Stefan, how is it going with you? We're recording this on a Saturday, of course, unusual time, so we can have the rest of our Easter weekend off. But I think it's also fitting to do this right after the match. But first of all, how's it going?
I'm good. I've just stuffed my face with a big bowl of veggie spaghetti bolognese and a glass of wine. Oh, so if I start to drift off halfway through this episode, you guys will know why. Don't worry, just leave me be. I'm happily snoring away. Luckily, we had a game that was anything but boring or tiresome or anything else, any other synonym you want to apply to it. So yeah, I'm quite buzzed up, actually, to be honest, after that game. And yeah, I think there's plenty to talk about, isn't there?
There is plenty to talk about. I think we had the preview show, of course. We recorded on Thursday, and Stefan and you and I pretty much agreed that there's two outcomes to this game. Either Dortmund play this textbook Champions League, like the Champions League football, or they will get absolutely steamrolled. And it was first. I think actually from a tactical perspective, Dortmund got this perfect. You got to say, though, too, that I think they were aided by a Bayern Munich midfield that decided today was a good time to emulate what public transport is in Germany is doing in strike. Because Dortmund had this way too easy at times, I think.
Yeah, I think we've kind of said, we joked on the podcast that it'd be classic Dortmund to win this game because it's finally a declassicer that neither of these two teams need to win to challenge for a title. I actually said something similar on Twitter before the game started, and it's just ballooned into an absolute dumpster fire of an argument, as you can imagine. It's currently sitting on 400 retweets and 4,000 likes, which I think those 4,000 likes are the 4,000 Bayern fans still left. I just said it'd be very Dortmund to win the Wonder Classica that didn't matter. And yeah, I think the 4,000 people that liked it are the 4,000 Bayern fans that left after the 80th minute, as we saw on television. But no, it was, it wasn't a game that was completely meaningless to Dortmund by any means, obviously. And I think we saw that throughout the match, didn't we? We saw one team who obviously had a very clear plan, very clear tactics. Every single player really kind of ran through a brick wall for Edin Terzic tonight. And what I thought was quite interesting, I was doing a bit of TV work, and as part of the kind of studio thing, and they had an interview with Reerson after the match, and he said, I don't know if this went out to the international feed or not, maybe it did, but he basically said, look, we had a tactic, we had a plan to win this game, which I hope this doesn't sound condescending, but I honestly would love to know. I know it's impossible to tell, but I'd really love to know how many times Dortmund over the years have actually gone to the Allianz Arena and earnestly tried to win that game, because it's just something we're not used to. It's not something they tend to do, but I think he's really quite telling about the way the state that Bayern are in this season, that Dortmund can genuinely go there and think, we've got a chance of winning this game, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, I talked to my dad yesterday, and he listened to our prediction podcast, Stefan. He said to me, I think you got this right, Manu. Dortmund are going to win this game, because that's simple.
He never tells me when he thinks I've got it right. He never texts me to say when I get it right. He's got my number. Yeah, really, he should.
Don't worry. He tells me all the time when I'm wrong, but he did agree with me there. Not because I actually really thought that Dortmund are better than Bayern. I think it was the narrative. It was written in the stars. It just seems so typical for this Dortmund team to win a game that, I mean, they had to win this. And especially because what happened at the Leipzig game, right? There was sort of, there was a real good opportunity for them to put light between them and Leipzig in the Champions League race. So we can't say this wasn't an important game for Dortmund, because it was. They still have to secure Champions League football, right? But of course, it wasn't a title, an important game for them to win, to be in the title race. And Matt, I kind of feel that is also important here for this narrative, because I think the expectations were just so different this time. You know, not the entire world didn't look at Dortmund to finally end Bayern's dominance on the Bundesliga. And I think that made a difference.
Yeah, it was interesting to see how both teams reacted differently to the results earlier in the afternoon. It was almost as if those two late goals for Leverkusen against Hoffenheim, which we'll come on to later, it was almost as if that really put the nail in the coffin for Bayern Munich. Even before the game had kicked off, after the game you had Joshua Kimmich complaining about the attitude being as if it was a friendly. He was absolutely fuming. Sven Ulreich effectively wrote off the title there and then, which is a fair enough thing to do. 13 points behind now, and he said, we've got nothing to do with that anymore, and he's absolutely bang on. So that seemed to affect them, but then similarly, the Mainz nicking a point away at RB seemed to really, really galvanise Borussia Dortmund. And like you said, they didn't just go into the game with a plan. The plan would have been there regardless of how RB had got on earlier in the day. But there was absolutely a determination to see that through from Borussia Dortmund today. And it's something that we've not seen at all consistently in the Bundesliga. We have seen it in the Champions League, in fairness to them. That's been the massive... the massive contradiction, the weird paradox of Borussia Dortmund throughout this entire season, hasn't it? They have turned up with clear tactical plans in the Champions League against tough opponents and seen them through with really admirable professionalism, and yet they've had this absolutely bizarre inconsistency in the Bundesliga. I'm not going to say there was none of that today. There were a couple of phases in the game where they did drift towards getting very passive again. And they were maybe a little bit fortunate that Bayern were completely off the pace. But in general, I'd say 90% of the game, absolutely spot on from Edin Terzic. Top on game management for once. And that's, again, something I think we've all criticised him And then rightly so far on several occasions. But I think he got it absolutely right today. Obviously, Bayern in that midfield they massively missed Pavlovic and Gvozdanovo. So I thought the whole Goretzka-Lima partnership was so slow and lacking in dynamism compared to the work that Adeyemi, Sancho, Brandt was doing. Even in the build of the first, goal, Niklas Füllkrug dropping in a bit deeper again and helping on play. So much more movement, so many more options being created, Bayern defenders being dragged left, right and centre. Dortmund really following through on what Edin Terzic was saying in an interview earlier this week about how he sees Dortmund's attacking play. Now, it's not like him saying that. He says it a lot, but we just so rarely see it. Today we actually saw it. So, very, very, very little negative to say about Dortmund today.
Even the Haller substitution late, I thought we kind of talked to each other in the chat, like, what is he doing there? And then Haller provided the assist.
That says it all, doesn't it? It shows what we were all quite dubious about that.
It made sense. Like, initially I was always like, why? And then I'm like, okay, that's why.
It worked. I thought at first when they brought Haller on, I thought you sort of just doubling what you have up front. You've already got Niklas Füllkrug doing that job. Why go like for like pairing them up? I thought Bynum Kittens would have been a better option. But no, there's obviously no arguments in hindsight either.
I think the other thing as well we have to bear in mind is that not only did we all, well, I guess except Manu in the previous show, more or less write Dortmund off ahead of this game, but then the lineups came out and people thought, oh, well, no, they definitely don't have a chance because they're missing,
Sabitzer. My prediction when I saw the lineup.
They're missing Sabitzer, they're missing Daniel Malin. I'm trying to think who else off the top of my head, if there's someone else I'm missing. But
Kobe.
Kobe. Which goes to show, I mean, it shows how good Meyer played that I completely forgot about that. But I think those two players have been so important for Dortmund in the way that they've attacked, even specifically in the Champions League. And that PSV second leg, they're both really important. And, you know, I'd actually probably say I was so impressed with Adeyemi and to a slightly lesser extent, Jadon Sancho. More so, not just because Adeyemi was able to step in for Daniel Malin and arguably do better than Malin probably would have done on the night, but I would even go so far as to say that I thought Nemcha was actually probably Dortmund's most disappointed player in the attempts to try and fill in for Sabitzer in the middle of the park there. And the fact that Dortmund were able to almost more or less kind of play beyond that was down to obviously the front line doing very well. Also thought Julian Brandt as a link-up player played tremendously well. Matson offered a really incredible kind of dimension to that left flank that we've not seen in a long time. And I'm sure many in the Allianz Arena were thinking, if we lose Alphonso Davies this summer, that guy will do just fine. You know, it's because he was basically like, he was kind of inciting old peak Alphonso Davies with some of his runs, especially that one where he almost scored at the end of it. So
you should arguably have made it 2-0 before Ryerson did.
I mean, so it's probably Nemcha too. Nemcha should have also made it 2-0.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just
thought that it felt like so many things can, even Jadon Sancho to an extent, like I don't think another thing I almost tweeted out, which I didn't because I thought it might come across the wrong way, but I was going to say something along the lines of Jadon Sancho is skipping by Bayern fans with ease, but doing it at like walking pace. And, you know, that sounds almost like an insult, but he was just so nonchalant and so cavalier with the ball, and just Kimmich had a horrid time trying to get the ball off him.
You were going to tweet that after that moment where he danced past Kimmich and then went back for a step over.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
he also did the same to Davies on the other side. He did the exact
same thing
to Davies.
Yeah, the Davies one was the one that came to mind because he went past Davies without actually really breaking a sweat, which was just remarkable.
So easy. Yeah.
And he had a moment with Harry Kane on the wing as well. So I thought him and Adeyemi played perfectly well. But, you know, this is, as Matt said, you know, it was Terzic ball 101. It was defensive football. It's everyone pack the six-yard box, let Mats Hummels do his heroics, and then we've got Brand, Adeyemi, and Jadon Sancho, and Füllkrug pulling back, and these guys can play off them. And it worked wonders because they know how to do that, because they've obviously been well drilled in the Champions League, but also because Bayern were just absolutely atrocious. And, you know, I think that opening goal probably summed up both teams really well, where you've got Dortmund playing a really impressive passing counter-attack, but they're doing so right through the Bayern midfield. It wasn't as if Adeyemi outran, you know, Joshua Kimmich and then took advantage of Eric Dier's pace. They took the ball off Müller and then passed it through Leimer and Goretzka as if they weren't even there. And I think that probably did a good job of just completely summing up what was completely wrong with Bayern. Not just this game, but this season.
What was interesting with that passing move for the first goal, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but this, like I said, at the weekend, Terzic gave a big exclusive interview to Kicker over several pages. And the paragraph that stood out to me is when he was talking about how Dortmund wanted to go forward, and he sort of listed three sort of tactical approaches, and in that order that he wanted to sort of see that through. And the first was being able to play through a team. And if that doesn't work, then try and look for those moments on the transition, on the counter-attack. If that doesn't work, try and go around down the flanks. Which I thought that sort of order of things is actually a bit odd, given that you had the likes of Ryerson and Matson and Sancho and Adeyemi. They can give you so much options down the flanks. But be that as it may, that first goal was surely exactly what he was talking about as option number one, how to play through a midfield. And they did that. That was absolutely textbook stuff.
I also think Ulrich needs to stop that. But you keep going. I think Ulrich should have stopped that. That goal should not count.
All I was going to say was, correct me if I'm wrong, but was Nuri Sahin not brought into the club specifically to help with Dortmund's passing? And
with the attacking stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought it was quite telling that after the game, Terzic, Sven Bender and Nuri Sahin were all kind of standing together, having a laugh, almost like three old mates who, it's like the end of like a video game or something, the three of them just kind of standing there gloating that they'd beaten the final boss. And obviously they probably felt quite vindicated because the three of them have obviously been working on to work on some sort of system to get Dortmund forward, and it just felt like everything clicked in this game, and that's probably down to the three of them, I suppose, isn't it?
Perhaps start telling that Dortmund, given that only Füllkrug went to the national team over the last two weeks, that Dortmund effectively had a full contingent of players to work with for 2 weeks with no distractions. I wonder if that played a role.
But Bayern didn't send that many either.
That's true.
You know,
but they did send
Kimmich,
Musiala,
really.
And I thought Musiala looked really jaded in this game. Yeah, he looked really tired in this game. Sorry, where you go?
I was going to say the same you can say about Kane. Musiala and Kane looked like they weren't there at all.
Oh yeah, that was the biggest problem I think for Bayern. The fact that Kane obviously wasn't 100% fit, and as we talked about through the game, Manu, you know, we had Seb on recently, and he explained in quite thorough detail the tortures of watching Harry Kane recover from injuries over the course of the last 10 years and how long it takes. But I kind of want to take a minute just to think about Musiala for a second, because he's obviously burst onto the scene very young, and he looked, you know, unbreakable. But this season in particular, I feel like we've seen a player really, really struggle with either just general fitness or niggling injuries, or just the fact the last kind of two or three seasons are really beginning to catch up on him. And the fact that how much Bayern really relied on him in the last two seasons. And it's not really, I don't want to really kind of set off any alarm bells or, you know, maybe peril clutching or anything like that, but I do wonder if we're there's so many parables or, you know, stories of players in the past. You know, from a British point of view, I would say maybe Michael Owen's a perfect example of this, where you had so many players who start off so extremely young and they play so much football that by the time they're 22, 23, they're just completely burnt out. And I don't know if we're at that point yet for Musiala. I mean, I don't think he's burnt out by any means, but there's undoubtedly signs there this season that, if not the requirement that Bayern put on him for this at this moment in time, the requirements they put on him in previous seasons are catching up with him. And it says maybe a lot about the fact that this team just, I mean, we saw in this game, they would just give the ball to Musiala and say, right, go do something magical with it, or go score a goal.
Yeah.
And he's like 30 yards away from goal and he's got 10 players in front of him.
I think you're spot on, because the same was true for Germany before Wirtz showed up, right? Remember before Wirtz came back from his injury? I mean, there's that moment at World Cup 22 where he skips through the Japan defense and then skies the ball right at the last moment. And but so many times at the World Cup, they just gave the ball to him and hope for the best. It for the German national team, that's not been an issue the last two games because Wirtz is finally back, so there's like another outlet. But I think you're absolutely right. I mean, like, we won Bayern Munich the title last year. It was Musiala, very late Musiala goal against Cologne, right? So, and even today, Kane was, I mean, he scores that offside goal, and whether that was offside or not, we can debate until the cows come home. But, you know, at the end of the day, you kind of sense that the demand was there again for either one of them to pull the coals out of the fire for Bayern Munich. And Kane wasn't able to because he's clearly not fit. And Musiala too. I mean, Musiala, we have to add too. And I think, I wonder how much of a factor that was, that foul by Ryerson in the first half. He wasn't the same after that. And that looked that looked really bad. I actually was surprised that he was able to continue because he was on the ground for quite a long time. And then even when he was back standing, and you just know the type of player that he is, if he doesn't have that mobility in any of his joints, it's just not happening for him. So I wonder if that was a factor in this game for him as well.
I was quite surprised that they didn't actually pull that back because the commentator said at the time, I can't remember who was commentating the game, a good point, like it's almost identical to the red card Sabitzer got against Wolfsburg or Werder Bremen.
I think Dortmund got away there with one. Yeah. I think that was a red card.
I think we've heard that previously, haven't we? There was the Sabitzer red card, There was the Thielmann red card. There's been a few for those touches on legs, on backs of ankles. And that was, that one was probably worse than any we've seen actually. So that was a bit inconsistent. And as for the Kane goal, you're right. It is tight. It's tight. And personally, I don't think there's any difference between that and the Leverkusen winner.
I have to admit, I actually haven't seen the replay of either one because I was writing. But like,
it's tight and. I know we can draw lines till the cows come home and VAR and blah, 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 and that debate's been had, but ultimately when it's that negligible, then it can't be in the spirit of the game. And
it's black and white for offside, but I actually kind of disagree. It's not the same as a goal line, right? Like the German goal against the Netherlands, right? That ball is over the line or not, but that goal line is always at the same place. It's a static line and you can't, with offside, you can draw lines, but when do you draw the line?
Exactly. Anyway, different debate. I agree. Different debate.
I don't think offside was designed to decide decisions by millimeters. No. But
it was designed to stop fat Hungarian strikers from sitting in the box for 90 minutes. So it was designed to stop people being 20 yards. Yeah, it's designed to stop strikers being 20 yards behind the back line. But
that's how you scored your goals back at school in SFA.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish. I played plenty of Saturday League to know that offside saves you has made a whole category of strikers extinct. Before we maybe move on from this game, there's just one more thing I want to talk about, and that's the fact that not only was this a great result for Dortmund, but I think it also sets them up really nicely for the fixed round of games they have, because they play Stuttgart at home, Atletico Madrid away, Gladbach away, Atletico Madrid at home, Leverkusen at home, and then Leipzig away. So that's, 6 games, all but one of them you'd expect Dortmund go into as not the favourites. So not only could Terzic basically turn and say, right, we're sticking with this game plan for the next, up until end of April, but the players are obviously quite buoyed by it, they're galvanised by it, and, you know, you don't really want to kind of start reading the tea leaves and suggesting them, but after this game, I did kind of think, are we on the verge of Dortmund going on another one of those kind of end of season runs where they start causing just... I'm not suggesting they're going to challenge for a title. I'm just saying, not quite that far, but I guess... Let me just taper those expectations and bring it down a little. All I'm suggesting is of those 6 games, say they beat Gladbach, 5 games are expected to lose, okay? you could look at that now and say, if they win three or four of them off the back of this and off that kind of performance, it would be surprising, but having that result against Bayern, they would have that confidence to maybe have a go at something like that.
So I want to just say one thing. That Dortmund-Leverkusen game on Sunday, April 21st, is Leverkusen's first match ball to win the title.
Okay.
They win because they need three more wins, right? Leverkusen needs, and then that's it. That's game over. Like, officially, we can all go home and, you know, write our end of the season reviews on Leverkusen.
Maybe the follow up to my controversial tweet would be, it would be so Dortmund to put a hole in Leverkusen's title challenge and inadvertently allow Bayern to win it again. If that defeat led to Leverkusen just completely capitulating, but
I think that shit is probably sailed. But that, I mean, I can certainly imagine Dortmund at least trying their best to get a couple of points of Leverkusen there, not to give away the title on their own ground. Sure, no one wants to see that given what happened last year. It's a massive, massive month though, isn't it, for Dortmund? And I think I'd probably even go as far to say that this April could dictate to a large degree how we see Borussia Dortmund going forward as a club in years to come. I mean, obviously, it's a lot of hypotheticals, but if they come through, it's the toughest set of fixtures they can probably think of. Even though they have probably got, arguably, the most doable Champions League tie, if that's how you can put it. If they come through all that well and they qualify for let's just say hypothetically they reach the Champions League semi final and they finish fourth in the Bundesliga, I think that's an absolutely huge success out of this month. It'll say a lot about Edin Terzic, and it will give whoever is going to come in the sporting director next year, whether that is a Sven Mislintat working under a Sebastian Kehl, obviously it's all up in the air at the moment, gives them an awful lot of food for thought. It would also suggest that certain players have really made their mark. You'd expect big performances from the likes of Julian Brandt, from Jadon Sancho. Where does that leave him? Extend loan deal to Man United, then look to either bring him back or move him on for an even bigger fee somewhere else. All sorts of things are going to be up in the air based on Borussia Dortmund's next month. I think it's easy to say today after that performance in Munich that there's a chance that they can do that. They can come through it well and get good results there. I think, if we're being honest, having watched Borussia Dortmund for the past few years, the likelihood is that they won't keep up that form consistently. And yeah, we'll see where it goes from there. But so it's a massive, massive month.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode of the Gegenpressing podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. The tournament is here. BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contest out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up until the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices and even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. Head to the BetOnline today and get in on the action. Remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that is BLEAV, BELIEVE, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. I actually think that if Dortmund reached the semi-final of the Champions League, they will reach the final. Because they will play teams that they like to play against.
who will they get in the semi-final again?
PSG or Barcelona?
Well...
it's not crazy.
We're getting a long way ahead of ourselves there. Let's see them beat Stuttgart first.
See, that is what I don't think is going to happen. I don't think they're going to beat Stuttgart. Because that's a completely Stuttgart are too good in midfield to be beaten by Borussia Dortmund. Because like, that's an entirely different beast. Because Bayern Munich were sliced open. And yet maybe the game ends different with Pavlovic on that side, right? I do think maybe it might. But Stuttgart is not going to do them those kind of favors. Stuttgart will say, oh, you want to play defensively? Okay, well, fine. We're just going to pass the ball around until we find a hole, and then we're going to beat you. Right? And I think it's a completely different beast. And I just don't see that maybe from the Champions League opponents that they're facing. So it's yeah, so tricky. This Dortmund team is just so weird. You know, like, they're great against big teams, and they're just kind of mid against everyone else.
It'd be a difficult decision, though, to, again, hypothetically, if they were to finish fourth and either get past Atletico Madrid, that's definitely very difficult to remove Edin Terzic, doesn't it?
Yeah, you make a lot of money when you reach the semifinals too. That's another big aspect. It becomes a huge part. I think you're already over 40 million at that stage, right? And that's the sort of money that club hasn't seen in a long time from Champions League football.
I think the other thing as well is, like, it's not even the Leverkusen or the Stuttgart game. For me, I think it's the Leipzig game is the important one in that run. Obviously, the Champions League stuff is important, but by that point, Leipzig would have played Freiburg, Wolfsburg, and Heidenheim. And, I mean, I wouldn't put it past Freiburg to obviously put a real dent in their chances, and maybe Heidenheim too, but you'd expect to probably beat Wolfsburg. So you'd think Leipzig could be, you know, 3-5 points ahead of Dortmund at that point in fourth place. So that's the must-win game. And as I think Matt's absolutely spot on, you know, prior to tonight's game, I looked at that list of fixtures and thought, there's no way Terzic is going to survive that. There's no way Dortmund get to the end of April after those fixtures. And the assumption is that Terzic will be the head coach next season. But if they can, and crucially, if they can beat Leipzig to claim fourth place, then it completely changes the narrative. And unfortunately, that's what football is. It's all about narratives. And those Dortmund fans that were at the Allianz Arena tonight, they'll remember that for so long. And they'll remember that when they think about whether Terzic should be the manager next season or not. That's all that really matters. It's, of course, it matters that they finish the top four. And of course, it matters that they win the remaining games. But it is those kind of moments that do play a kind of outsized role in things. So, yeah, I mean, it
must be said as well, despite all the drawbacks around Terzic, and there are lots of them, we've discussed them, he retains a massive, massive bank of credit in Dortmund, around the fan base. You'll struggle to hear a bad word said against him, despite a lot of the obvious
drawbacks. And if they finish top four and they do reach the semi-finals or more in the Champions League, you can't fire him. There's no way.
Of course not, because in two seasons, he's came within a whisper of winning the league, and the following season he went to the semi-finals, or more, I guess. He can play Bayern in the final, maybe.
Oh my God.
At
Wembley.
We're getting carried away now.
Again.
But, I mean, but that's what makes football
narrative,
so,
Stefan.
But that's what makes football so incredible, though, that, like, 2 weeks ago, you know, we were probably all talking about Terzic on borrowed time, and now we're like, well, you know, after the next 5 or 6 weeks, people might be saying he's been the best Dortmund manager since Klopp was there. So
I wouldn't put it beyond any narrative. After basing a bet on narrative that Dortmund would win this game at the Allianz, Dortmund now getting revenge 11 years after at Wembley over Bayern Munich. I mean, you couldn't get any better than that. Speaking of narratives, one of the narratives, the narrative that made me decide that Dortmund are going to win this game at the Allianz Arena and crown Leverkusen as effectively the champion became true, because Leverkusen have done it again, guys. I mean, are they ever going to lose a game again, Matt?
It's what champions do, and they've done it throughout the season.
It's incredible.
The first half of the season, Leverkusen, they weren't necessarily reliant on the last minute winners because they were so consistently good. I think in the second half of the season, and it's not really criticism, but I think there have been more games where they've not been convincing. Heidenheim away springs to mind. They weren't brilliant. They've had a couple of late ones where they've got away with, I think Darmstadt wasn't particularly impressive. Cologne away against 10 men, they weren't brilliant, but they did what they had to do. I thought today against Hoffenheim, from what I saw of it, although my dodgy illegal stream kept letting
which
me down.
We never use and don't endorse.
Of course not, but I think it's disgraceful. I'm going to so much effort to use an illegal stream. At least they could do to provide a good service. Anyway, it was a poor game. deservedly for Hoffenheim, Maximilian Bayer, once again, we mentioned it a few times this year, haven't we? He having an outstanding, he surely won't be at Hoffenheim next season.
No.
If I'm going to be like overly critical of Leverkusen, for Robert Andrić got pulled well out of position for Hoffenheim's goal. I don't know if you've seen that, Manu, or you missed it before, but basically leaves a big hole in the middle, which Bayer is able to go into and then get the return pass, but he does it well. Obviously, Andrić makes up for it with the equaliser, and the winner is, it's incredible how calm Leverkusen remain in the 91st minute. When they're going for the title, they've got so much going on around them. They get a throw-in on the left, and what do they do? There's no hoofing it into the box. There's no panic. They play five passes, moving it slowly across the pitch, finding space, down the right, ball in, goal. It's the sort of goal you'd expect them to score after in the 7th or 8th minute when you're under no pressure at all.
Someone said to me,
to do that in the 91st minute was absolutely, was incredible. Hats off, and they absolutely deserve the title. They really do.
Someone said to me online, that's not sustainable, to which I responded, Bayern Munich have been doing it for decades. So have the great Man United sides under Ferguson. Big teams win games late because they're just better. You know, and that's just how it is, because like a good team, a well-coached team will not be faced by these sort of difficulties, and they will not resort to the, as you called it, hoofing the ball into the box and hoping for the best. They will just say, hey, we're the better team. We're going to stick to our football because we know it's going to work, and it's going to work eventually. And that's, you know, that's why these goals are also not quote-unquote luck. Let's hope for the best goals. They're well played out goals, and like a good team will do this from the first minute to the very last, and that's why they're able to break down teams that are not as good as they are. And you know, like how many times have Bayern done this over the last few years? You know, a late winner by Tell here, classic late goal by Lewandowski there. You know, like we've seen it so many times, and not this year because they're just not as good as they used to be, but we've seen it so many times. And so I say that's actually more of like that further underlines how good of a team they are. It's not sustainable because good teams play good football to the very last second. So, and that speaks volume for the man who's in charge, and that's Javi Alonso.
Yeah, it says it all, that like, it came in this week of all weeks as well. I mean, the news that he's staying during the weekend.
I think it's great that he's done it, because these rumors would have gone on and on and on and on. And for him to say, look, I'm not going anywhere. It was almost like this, what's that Wall Street movie called again? I'm Going Nowhere. It was kind of
Wolf of Wall Street. Moments.
I saw that clip doing around a bit. Yeah,
but it was totally one of those moments. I'm like, I'm going nowhere. I'm here to stay. This is my place. I want to keep working. And you know what? I bet you every single player in the squad said, like, hell yeah, I'm staying too, right? And I think that makes a huge difference for this club going forward. And it will kind of, you know, the Bundesliga title, quote-unquote, is wrapped up. But they still have the Pokal, which they're playing next week in the semifinal. And they still have the Europa League. I mean, there is still stuff for them to win beyond the Bundesliga. So while they're now making this long parade to the Bundesliga title, it's almost like, do you shift away to these other objectives? Try to win as much as possible this year.
Yeah.
The decision speaks volumes of the work that's being done at Leverkusen by Simon Rolfes and Fernando Caro above him. I thought all along, immediately after the Jurgen Klopp news and after the Thomas Tuchel news, when this rumour mill, you know, typically fired by the usual suspects on Merseyside and in Munich. I thought it was a bit ridiculous, and I thought all along, I thought there was a chance that he'd go. But I always put it at 33%. I thought it was just as likely that he'd go to Liverpool, go to Bayern, or stay. I always thought it was absolutely just as likely.
Trust a boy from Manchester to blame it on the pesky Merseyside reporters.
Oh, it's not just them though, Stefan. There's a couple of guys.
I know.
But we know who they are.
Exactly. I thought the entire reporting around it, just, I thought it ignored some of the key factors at play in Leverkusen, in that he's working in arguably the most professional and calm and stable environment in European football at the moment. And there are reasons for that. And part of them being no one cares about Bayer Leverkusen. So there's no massive press attention on him. There's no media circus. Mm. There's no huge supporter fan pressure. It's not like he can't walk down the high street in Leverkusen because there is no high street in Leverkusen.
Don't underestimate that shopping mall, Matt.
I actually went for a kebab down there a couple of weeks ago. Really, really good, just outside the station. So if anyone's there, good kebabs. But in seriousness, he's in an ideal place. Leverkusen, they're under absolutely no pressure to sell. Firstly, because they've done good work to nail key players down to long-term contracts. And secondly, let's not beat around the bush, because they're backed by a massive pharmaceutical company. They don't need the money in the same way that a Gladbach or a Dortmund or a whoever would need the money. So many things there going in Alonso's favour, and for the key comment that he made in his press conference, which spoke a lot about him as a person and as a manager, was that he admitted how young and how relatively inexperienced he is as a coach. And this isn't the first time. He stayed an extra year, I think at least, with Real Sociedad's B team before moving on to a bigger job.
Because he was offered the Gladbach job, wasn't he?
By Ibar, yeah.
He knows exactly where he is in his own development as a coach. And I think he's intelligent enough to recognise the environment that he's found himself in now in Leverkusen and how that will benefit him. He's got a huge career ahead of him. He's got decades ahead of him to go to Liverpool, Bayern Munich, whoever you want. But I thought it spoke volumes of him, of Bayer Leverkusen, that he made that decision. And ultimately, it's a good thing for the Bundesliga that he stays. Really, mm-hmm. really good decision.
I think so too.
I think the other thing as well is it's not as if we're talking about some Brighton manager or, you know, the head coach of Sporting or something and saying, you know, this guy's done an incredible job with a team that are only going to get so far. I mean, this Leverkusen team could legitimately, I mean, if Dortmund can get to a semi-final this year, there's nothing to say Leverkusen can't do exactly the same thing next year, because they do have a much better team. They've got a much better team than Dortmund. They've got a much better team than Bayern right now. And, you know, unless it does get pulled apart, which is looking increasingly unlikely, you know, Leverkusen must surely be looking at next season's Champions League and licking their lips, thinking, we can go really far in this. And I'm assuming, I don't think that's the only reason that Alonso wants to stay, but I think that's something as well, just to add to what Matt was saying, is completely overlooked. I think a lot of people outside of Germany think, oh, he's done really well with plucky Leverkusen, and, you know, he's managed to get a song out of Jonathan Tah, and isn't it nice that Jonas Hoffmann's getting a swan song before he packs all in and things like that. And, oh, Patrick Schick, remember him? He was useless at Roma. It's all these things, like, and it's almost like people think this team's made up of has-beens and journeymen and stuff, but actually, it's a really, really good team that, you know, it's not, you know, we're not really used to seeing, like, teams outside of the top 8 or 9 clubs in European football do anything incredible, but they were a whisker away from reaching last season's Europa League final, probably favourites for this season's competition alongside Liverpool, I suppose. And once they play in the Champions League next year, you would bet on them to, well, I mean, I know the format's changing, but you would bet on them to get quite far in it. So I think that's something that has to be also said as well, because that also reflects on this game itself. And I think this game alone also did a good job of showing the difference between Leverkusen and Bayern this season. You know, we talked about how ineffective Musiala was, how isolated Kane was, how Goretzka and Konrad Leimer just couldn't offer anything in the middle of the park. You then flip over to this Leverkusen team where you've got Patrick Schick stepping up, who's been out for much of the season. You've got Florian Wirtz doing what he does. You've got two central midfielders in Xhaka and Andrić. I know Andrić got the goal on the day, but Xhaka could have scored a goal. He had two or three really great shots which could have went in. And on either wing, you've got Grimaldo and Frimpong, who are chomping the bit to do something as well. So Bayern are a team that relied on one or two players, and when that doesn't work, it falls apart. Leverkusen are a team with 7 or 8 players, and each of one of them can win a game at any point. And that's why they're able to pull off these results. That's why they don't panic, and it's why they see out games to the very end and always end up winning them, because it's not as if they just give the ball to Wirtz and say, go win the game for us, like Bayern do with Musiala, because Wirtz knows he's got 3 or 4 other players who can do, maybe not do exactly what he can do, but are have the mental capacity or the mental, maturity to step up and try and win the game themselves. And, you know, we're talking about a team here who haven't even got Boniface back. Palacios, I think, is meant to come back before the end of the season. Two huge players for them. Kosunu has
a World Cup winner, Palacios.
Kosunu, I don't think, has really been back to the team since African Cup of Nations because obviously that back line's working. So Alonso is either on purpose or by force rotating the squad because of injury or because he wants to kind of keep the minutes low on the legs of a lot of these players. But the fact that they're now in the home stretch and Boniface is expected to return makes me think that they've got plenty of petrol in the tank to kind of keep going to the end of the season.
I find the whole Leverkusen narrative and what they're doing this year, finally burying the ghosts of 2002, you know, the whole Leverkusen or Vizekusen, as it's called in German, narrative, incredibly fascinating. Because when I grew up in the 1990s in Germany and the early 2000s, Leverkusen were one of Bayern Munich's big enemies, right? And then they kind of disappeared. Some of it had to do with Bayer kind of lowering the amount of money that they were giving to the team. But also, you know, it kind of showed you how they just maybe also lacked a vision to hire someone like Alonso and use the still significant resources that they had, similar to what Wolfsburg is doing at the moment, right? Like, Wolfsburg is one of the teams with the biggest budgets in German football, and they, by lack of better words, suck. And Leverkusen very much was kind of like Wolfsburg in that regard. And it kind of shows you that when you have people in charge who are willing to make big decisions and outside the box thinking decisions, like Alonso, like Rolfes did with Alonso, right? And Rolfes was the understudy of Rudi Völler. And Rudi Völler, maybe a bit of a more conservative thinker before he handed it over to Rolfes. And Fernando Caro, who I think probably played a pretty significant role in A, getting Alonso and keeping him there, be a Spaniard and all that. I think shows you that with a little bit of creative thinking and a little bit of outside the box thinking, you can get a lot more out of these big Bundesliga teams. And Leverkusen is one example. You can say the same about Wolfsburg, maybe even Leipzig, Dortmund, etc., right? And that kind of makes you think too, like Bayern Munich now in their coaching search, it'd be really interesting to see if they pay attention to what happened there and maybe think outside the box as well, or any other Bundesliga club too, because that is, I think, what is so fascinating about this Leverkusen side, that in my mind they're just returning to the status that they had in the late 90s, early 2000s, where they were a natural title challenger, not just in the Bundesliga but also in the Champions League. Remember, they narrowly lost to Real Madrid in 2002 in that final. And that is good news for German football overall, because it makes the league more competitive, but it also should be a moment that all the Bundesliga teams should be learning from.
Absolutely. And I think that idea of thinking outside the box, I think that's what I now expect as an observer of Christoph Freund and Max Eberl at Bayern Munich, which is why, and I think Stefan, me and you might disagree on this, I think, but I thought the reports connecting Bayern to Ralf Rangnick, I thought it's the opposite of that. I'm pretty horrified by that.
No,
actually,
I think you guys agree on that.
No, I agree. I also think.
Okay. maybe I misread something you posted, or maybe I missed the sarcasm. I don't know, but I swear you posted something about it being a good move, Rangnick.
I said uninspiring. The uninspiring was...
Maybe I missed off the own. Okay, sorry, my apologies.
Didn't Gladbach under Max Eberl try to hire Raul?
Yeah, you said that, I think, on social media, didn't you? Yeah.
And I think that would be an interest. I don't report this. I'm not reporting here. I'm speculating. I think that would be fascinating. Something like that. I mean, De Zerbi is the one that's being floated, you know.
I know it's not completely outside the box, you know, like no one's heard of Roberto De Zerbi, right? But that is the sort of direction I would like to see Eberl and Freund go in. Absolutely. Yeah, not the Ranić route, not even the Julian Nagelsmann route, although I don't think that'd be completely ridiculous, but certainly not the Ranić idea. But yeah, so, think outside the box, be creative, move things on, be progressive. And again, I know it's all right me saying that and demanding it, but ultimately it's not my job. I'm not buying Munich's sporting director. I'm not paid the massive money to make that decision. Christoph Freund, Max Eber, they are. So that's why I'd like to see that sort of thinking, because it has been proven since by Simon Rolvers in Leverkusen that can be done.
But not just them, I mean other clubs too.
Yeah, absolutely. But you expect more from Bayern, obviously, because
I think the difference is though, the Leverkusen do have a history of going outside the box for players. You know, they obviously have a history of scouting South America for a lot of players, and that was before Simon Rolfes came in. I forgot his name now. His predecessor is now at Hamburg, I believe.
Jonas Bolt.
That's exactly what I was thinking of. I think he's the one who implemented that kind of whole South American
scouting network. Goes back further than that, Stefan. It goes back all the way to Rainer Kallmund early 1990s. Yeah. And it was because I think Bayer had a plant in South America and they used that to
hiring guys in the factory floor in Brazil.
No, there's truth in both of those. Bolt is, as far as I know, a Spanish speaker and has spent some time in the world for a while.
Yeah.
But I've been to a long time ago.
Yeah. And I don't know if anyone listening will probably might even know or even come from that part of the world. There's a relatively big following of Bayer Leverkusen among Southern United States, I think.
I thought you were going to say there's a big community of German speakers in South America, and I thought, let's maybe not shine a light on that.
let's not talk about how they got there.
Yeah, exactly. But to bring it back to the football and to modern day, I think Leverkusen do have a history of thinking outside the box for players, and obviously Xabi Alonso fits into that. Bayern, I still think they're probably a little too conservative for that. I think for all the hope that maybe someone like De Zerbi can come, I personally don't know if I do rate De Zerbi that highly, but someone like that, I could totally see the appeal of going outside the box. But we've already had Jones in recent weeks kind of saying, you know, oh, well, Nagelsmann actually fell out with Oliver Kahn and Salihamidžić, so they're gone, and everyone else at the club always loved him and we still love him, so, you know, that'd be fine.
Lothar Matthäus banging that drum as well for Nagelsmann. Yeah.
I said on this podcast, by the way, like a month ago, that Nagelsmann will be back at Bayern, because it was that's just how mental it was. But even if it's not Nagelsmann, because I'd still be quite surprised if Nagelsmann actually went back. I can see why Bayern would kind of want to rebuild those bridges. But let me just speculate, then you can see the real stuff. If not Nagelsmann, I still think Sebastian Hoeneß would be too enticing over a left field choice, to be honest with you. So that'd be my suggestion.
You're right about Nagelsmann, and it is between, it looks like it is between the DFB and Bayern. And it, you know, the signals have been made in both ways. Nagelsmann is not directly from Munich, but has close enough ties to Munich and it still lives there, right? But the last two games with the DFB, the way I've been told, have changed quite a lot between him and the relationship to the German Football Federation, and he's fallen in love with coaching the team, is what I've been told. And also, he really likes how Rudi Völler sort of protects him in public and has almost become like a replacement father figure for him in that regard. And that has been playing a big role in the way he sees his future, because someone like Rudi Völler, for example, has told him, look, Bayern will still be there in 2026. And that's not exactly that. If you go back to Bayern Munich right now, that's the best situation in the world. Because, you know, they're in a situation where they don't know what they want. They don't have a plan. And they, you know, half the players might not even be there, and you will not have much direction over, you know, what's going on right away. You might be best served to sit this out for a couple of years with the DFB, play a great Euros, play a great World Cup, maybe win one of those two. And then you can do whatever you want, including going back to Bayern Munich. And that is sort of the two things that are playing a big role at the moment in the thinking of Julian Nagelsmann. And I've been told it could go either way.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. Yeah. I personally would think it would be a massive shame to see Nagelsmann stick with international football. But
yeah, he's so young, he can do it for a couple more years and sort of see shit hit the fan at Bayern.
I think, we'll see what happens, I suppose, but I suspect the way that I think things will pan out this summer, I think Liverpool will end up going in for him because they'll probably look at the options they've got or the options they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you start taking Alonso off the table, you start taking Jurgen Klopp off the table.
But Liverpool is signing Nagelsmann's. Amorim.
Sorry?
Liverpool are going all in for Amorim.
That's the reports this week. Last week it was Alonso. Reporting. So, I mean, yeah, exactly. It could be anyone. I mean, it could be Mourinho next week for all we know. But that's just me reading the tea leaves. I suspect that I actually think Nagelsmann probably knows the way that the managerial market is right now.
All those reporters from whoever it is, the Echo or whatever, who were in Leverkusen last month, have they all gone to Portugal now? Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, they're kind of picking places on the European map. It's like, where are we going to go holiday next to look at the next head coach?
Some of the headlines were ridiculous. Anyway.
Yeah. I think, it's just a thought I had this afternoon. I thought if you say this guy's going here and that guy's going there, it leaves a big hole in Liverpool and Nagelsmann's the best guy still sitting there without a club job. So that's my very speculative suggestion.
Okay, that has not been mentioned to me, but whatever.
Well, we'll see.
Who knows? I don't know what's going on in Julian's mind either, so we'll have to wait and see. It's kind of fun because now that the Bundesliga season is slowly but surely getting wrapped up, we can speculate about all sorts of things and see how it all plays out, and that gives us tons of content to discuss over the next few weeks and months. Of course, want to wrap it up here. As always, this podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. Enjoy the upcoming week. There's the DFB Pokal is back. Two great semifinals. Curious to see if Saarbrücken can continue this run. Of course, we are going to have all of us newsletters back. Now that Matt is back from the international break, and until next time, auf Wiedersehen.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.